It is indeed the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program. And you are indeed listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give me 2 eggs. So, tomorrow I got nothing.
We believe that everybody should be born poor. 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. All right, I'm going to lead the show, this segment, where we're talking about shelter from the storm, you know, tents are affordable housing. This is a letter penned by Patrick Newman, a homeless advocate here in Chico, California, and he penned this letter to the editor, Chico Enterprise Record, dated 2/26/17. The letter was titled, "What Does Chico Really Do for Homeless People?" Joe Castle broke the law when he allowed people to camp on rented land. Also by his actions, Castle helped shelter dozens of people during the stormiest winter in memory. He broke the law, but not all lawbreaking is created equal. Sometimes breaking the law is answering a higher calling. History is replete with examples of lawbreaking in the cause of justice. Providing sanctuary to American slaves or Polish Jews was highly illegal, and perpetrators were prosecuted, imprisoned, and sometimes executed. We'd like to claim we'd been on the right side in 1839 or 1939. So in 2017, do we throw Joe Castle under the bus? A man, by all appearances, made a real sacrifice for complete strangers. I find Chief Mike O'Brien's position that the camp did more harm than good worth pondering. When was the last time O'Brien slept in the rain? It's pretty hard to get into the heads of 50 homeless people, but we might try. Given their proximity to the suffering, I'd say the campers might have the last word on harm and good. Lastly, stories on the subject of homelessness routinely mention the many wonderful services to which indigent are referred when rousted, or in this case, evicted. I hate to disturb anyone's sleep, but this is 99% fiction. All right, shout out to Patrick Newman for penning that and submitting it to the Enterprise Record. And it's my pleasure, actually, to land a little bit on what Mr. Newman had mentioned in regards to hearing from folks at the camp. Anyone that's listened to this program since last fall, I've had folks on from the farm. And this one's a pre-record that I just did with Mama Rose Adams. And she was one of the folks that was actually interviewed in a subsequent ER article last week. But she gives some real good insights on some of the points that Mr. Newman had made here on People Powered Radio. It's my distinct pleasure to have Mama Rose Adams. I've known Mama Rose Adams since I've been in Chico. She used to do a wonderful Sunday meal for the homeless. So welcome to KZFR, Mama Rose.
Thank you.
So we're interested, Mama Rose, in your experience at the farm, the tent city on the south side of Chico. Let us know how important that was to you and give us some insights on how much brighter it made your life.
It was nice to be able to go to bed at night and know that the cops were going to harass you. You had your own space. It's almost like home. A lot of us felt safe there.
Tell us how you felt safe there. What were some of the things that made you feel safer there than other places that you might have to rest your head at night?
One is not being bothered by the cops. And then you didn't have to every day, like now I'm back to every night I got to wonder where I'm going to sleep. Because what bushes I'm going to sleep in tonight, or who can I go ask who I can sleep with? We didn't have to do that.
So you had that removed that burden from you?
Yeah, now it's back.
That's a big time. Plus, you had a place to store your stuff. You know, what would you say to someone that, you know, there was a couple of folks, I think the mayor had made some comments around that this kind of proves that tent cities don't work. I mean, what would you say in response to that?
I don't know. Wait a minute. They do work. But you have to have rules, like the three rules I say is be good to each other, don't steal from one another, and if you're going to be messy, you can't be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because that one rotten apple, I'm telling you. I mean, out there, there was one right there, in the, as soon as you're going into it, a guy that just was, oh my God.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
He wouldn't go. But see, that's the thing, they kind of point somebody or a group, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To enforce it.
I'd made mention about how other camps, a lot of times they have a group of people that'll kind of interview you. And you
but
know,
I don't think interviewing's fair. I don't think that's fair. Because if somebody judges you as soon as you walk through the door, and people do that, that part is that they do it. They look, like I said, they can look at me and not like what they see, you know, and just automatic.
Everybody deserves
a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone. Just have some rules, you know? If you can't provide by the rules, you don't need to be there. I was so comfortable that I was going to start my Sunday dinners again.
Right there on the farm?
I mean,
Right. Really?
Yep.
Wow.
And then they knocked that out away from me again.
Let's try to see if we can't reach out to the community. Maybe we can find some place that'll host it, Mama Rose.
Let's do that.
Blessings to you.
I'll even be Mama Rose the mom for all those people. I don't care. I need to feel safe, and I need to that load off my shoulders until I can get on my feet. We need that spot because some of us don't choose to be here.
Huge shout out to Mama Rose Adams as we transition into an interview here with the co-founder of Right to Dream 2, a tent city village that provides a safe place to be and to sleep in Portland, Oregon. Cameron Nash here for the March 1st, March already, I can't believe it, without a radio program here on KCFR, and it's my real pleasure to introduce on a pre-record Trillium, who is with Right to Dream 2 out of Portland, Oregon. Welcome to KCFR, Trillium.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Trillium, in the work that you're doing up there in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, well, I am a co-founder and an active board member and supporter of Right to Dream 2. And Right to Dream 2 is a rest area, is what we call it, a rest area, a place where people without housing can get up to 10 hours of uninterrupted sleep so they're not being harassed by police or people on the street, security guards who are enforcing business districts and the like. And so we started in October of 2011 was when we actually set up the rest area on the corner of 4th and Burnside. And we had been organizing since July of that year with a landowner who was very disgruntled with the city of Portland and how they were controlling his rights to his land. And he decided he would give the land over to what he said was Dignity Village. Now, our co-founder, Ibrahim Mubarak, and myself, Ib, was a co-founder of Dignity, and I was also involved in supporting and had stayed at Dignity Village for periods of time. And so we recognized that along with other people who are involved with Right to Survive, our parent organization, and Dale Hardaway made contact with the landowner, Michael Wright, and from there we were able to organize to get everything in place that we needed so that on October 10th, World Homeless Action Day, October 10th of 2011, we launched the rest area and we began setting up tents and inviting the houseless community to come and stay and really shape and form what Right to Dream 2 would become. So we knew we had the land and we had some basic guidelines, but we knew that also it would become what it became due to the people who were living outside and would utilize the rest area and shape what it becomes.
So for our listeners, that's in downtown Portland, right? This is like in the downtown district of Portland.
A very prominent corner. It's right next to the gates of Chinatown.
Right next to the gates of Chinatown. That's a beautiful visual. No better place, it does not seem. What are some of the rules of the camp, Trillium, for folks that are listening?
They're pretty basic rules. We ask people, and we're a weapons-free, violence-free zone. So if people are carrying something for self-protection, they do need to check that in before they sleep for the night. We are a oppression-free zone, so any kind of racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic speech is not allowed. And if that happens, we do call people on that and give folks an opportunity to get some education around why their language is hurtful, but we do not tolerate that. We're zero tolerance. We cannot allow open flames because it's really dangerous in a tent area. And we have seen some tragic fires occur in other camps around the city and around the nation. So it's really important that people are protected. No open flames are allowed. We're a drug-free zone as well. And we have a lot of people who are currently in treatment or they have kick habits. And so it's important to us to create a really supportive environment where people can continue to remain free of drugs and alcohol within our gates.
Now, do you have service providers that are physically on site to try to help folks, or are they just basically they're there and then they go where they need to be when they wake up and get their stuff together?
Yeah, Right to Dream 2 actually is a really basic concept. All we looked around and we saw that people were not getting their human need for sleep met. And so although we do network with service providers, we don't have those services on site. And, you know, throughout the over 5 years we've been there now, we have networked with some groups and had that. But on an ongoing basis, what we're really doing is providing safe sleep. Clothing is, we always get donations of clothing and other essentials like hygiene things that people really need. And so we keep giving those out, especially like when people get their bags stolen on the street or their things confiscated by the police. We have people coming every day looking for just those basic things or blankets. If they're someone who's sleeping in a doorway, sometimes people aren't able to follow our rules, and just because they're unable to do that, if they're in a doorway, if we have blankets, we'll give them out because it's important to us that people have that basic human right to get some sleep, to stay warm, to, you know, to exist. That doesn't matter if they're struggling with an addiction or something, but we can't allow it within our gates. And so we also have food oftentimes, but our mission is to provide safe sleep. And then we refer people to all different kinds of places in the neighborhood and in the city for other services. And sometimes there's always a shortage of the services people need, but because our members who do all of the security and run the rest area are all experiencing houselessness and go to these places, they are really great resources for the community, especially folks who are just ending up on the streets for the first time, really get a lot of guidance from our members.
So folks just joining, we're talking with Trillium from Portland, Oregon, co-founder of Right to Dream 2, a rest area for folks without roofs in downtown Portland. One quick question on the facility itself, and that relates to, I think you said 10 hours. They have up to 10 hours they can stay there. But it's open 24. Can't you come in during the day or at night? Maybe that's the best way to phrase the question.
Absolutely. We have a check-in time each evening where we check in folks to sleep the night, and we're generally full every night. But then as people check out, sometimes we have people checking in, you know, most nights we have people checking in when they get off late from their night job, you know, and that might be midnight, 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, all throughout until 6 a.m. And at 7 a.m., people have checked in at 9 p.m., get their wake-up call and have a little bit of time to get up and use the restrooms and grab something to eat if we have it. And then we have some cleanup, and then we are checking people in throughout the day. And then we have another cleanup period before we do our night check-ins again.
So maybe a couple of testimonies, or is there a few short stories that stick in your mind as far as people have been helped from this facility over the past 6-7 years?
I mean, there's just so many people whose faces pop into my mind. I mean, I will say that our members are incredible people because what they're doing is providing a service which is a low-barrier shelter. So just to kind of explain, too, because we're a really unique model, we have members, and they go through a process of membership, and those folks have their own tents, and they will sleep in the member-only area, but that is the group of people who runs the rest area. And so they provide 24-hour security. We have at least 2 people on each shift checking people in, doing rounds, making sure things are safe in the neighborhood, keeping things clean. And so in addition to that, they do upkeep of the rest area. And then we also have a men's tent, a woman's tent, and a couple's tent. And so that's the shelter part of Right to Dream 2. I mean, everybody's there to seek a place to be safe and to sleep, but our members have their own area, and the shelter is really a low barrier shelter. So we don't judge people on if they've been kicked out of somewhere else, if they have a criminal history, you know, on record, things like that. We just take people as they are when they come in the gate. And that gives people an opportunity to show up as they are each and every day. And then our members understand that sometimes someone might kind of, you know, they haven't gotten any sleep. They've been roused by the police or security. And so they might not be their best self at that moment. And so people tend to be more compassionate and understanding and not just say, well, you can't come back here. So what we see is that a lot of people also are experiencing different kinds of physical challenges in their lives. And, you know, they've become homeless because they had a medical issue, all sorts of things. So Right to Dream 2 takes everybody. We don't discriminate against anyone, everybody over 18. I should say we are not able to take children, but everyone over 18. And it's really unique because a lot of the folks who stay with us, they have no place else to go other than in a doorway, under a bridge, under a bush. And, you know, it is our members who are also figuring out where they're going and how they're going to find a suitable housing situation, who have committed themselves to making sure that, you know, somewhere usually about 130 people in a 24-hour period have a safe place to sleep and that they have some support.
Yeah, maybe a good way to kind of transition to our next segment on Without a Radio program is to just talk a little bit about an idea that I kind of formulated talking with Trillium offline, is just kind of make this a Right to Dream 2 month. And why don't you tell us about some of the other folks we're going to be hearing from throughout the rest of March as it relates to Right to Rest in Portland, Oregon, and beyond.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that some of our current leaders will be able to be heard on the program later this month. And one of our co-founders, Leo Rhodes, also is a co-founder of Tent City 3 and of Nicholsville in Seattle. And so they've really been instrumental in a model for Right to Dream 2. Of course, Dignity Village, which was homegrown and started by one of our co-founders, Ibrahim Mubarak, is also, you know, one of our predecessors that we thank. And we have this really clear code of conduct and idea of how to operate thanks to tent cities that have been operating for decades. I believe the first tent city in Seattle went up in 1990. So Leo Rhodes is a wonderful asset to our community. He's also a journalist with Street Roots and one of our board leaders, Sarah Carr. So usually we have at least one person, if not more, who reside at Right to Dream 2 who are part of our board of directors. And Sarah is one of the leaders there who is just doing magnificent work. And she's also involved in Right to Survive, our parent organization, doing political work. So Right to Dream 2 is really holding it down as far as the basic human need to sleep. But then the systemic work is being done by our parent organization as well as a lot of other organizations in Portland. So there are two voices I'd like folks to hear. But, you know, you had asked about inspiring people, and I did want to say that I have seen so many people get jobs, get into suitable housing situations, and keep that housing, and people go back to school, keep babies, which is no small feat when you are pregnant and you're on the streets and Child Protective Services. It's really hard to be able to keep your child because of all the stigma and judgments around people who are experiencing houselessness. But we've just seen hundreds and hundreds of lives changed in this time. And so a lot of those folks come back and they continue to support by doing work with Right to Dream 2 or with other organizations who are working on systemic change.
That's just beautiful. I really appreciate, you know, this interview, and I'm looking forward to making this the entire month of March here on the Without a Roof Radio program all about Right to Dream 2 and Right for Shelter. Any quick closing comments, Trillium, before we close?
Well, I would like to say that this concept that tents are not suitable shelter is absurd, and I know that you know that, and I hope your listeners also know that. We're really dealing with that again from the establishment here, from our new mayor saying that, well, we can do better than that, but they're not doing better than that, and we are, as a community, we're doing better than that, and we can continue to do better, but we have to really fight to keep the basic human rights that we've been able to put forth by letting people have land to self-organize. So keep self-organizing, keep on taking care of each other, because we do make it a better, safer, and more just community when we work together.
The Router Root Radio program is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Sports LTD, a locally owned sporting goods store featuring bicycles, sports equipment, and apparel for all seasons since 1985. Chico Sports LTD is located in the Safeway Plaza on Mangrove Ave and is grateful for the support of local business and the community. All right, back in the studio, and once again, huge shout out to Trillium and Mama Rose and all the other folks that spoke on the show. But right now, we have Bob Trowse, founder and active board member of Chico Housing Active Chico Housing Action Team. Welcome to KZFR, Bob Trowse.
Thank you.
Maybe just a moment to talk a little bit about what you just heard from Right to Dream 2. And as I understand it, you were up there a few years back on your tour of the Northwest. Maybe give us some insight.
Right. We made a movie about 3 years ago. Well, look, I guess almost 4 years ago now, we made a movie of different communities that actually were progressive enough to realize that they had to do something about homeless rather than try and, you know, lock them up or harass them or try and move them out of town, and built tiny homes and did the necessary variances and code changes to allow them to build on property, whether they purchase it or, in most cases, on city land. In one case, on private property. And we need to do that in Chico, obviously. We do know what just happened. We know the safe space ended. It's really cold out there, and the more cold weather and rain is coming in this weekend. There's an awful lot of people that were safe and secure through the winter at safe space. They're out in the streets. We saw what happened at the fairgrounds. We saw what happened at Notre Dame. With all the people that were there, I think the substantial number of people there were homeless. And they were safe, at least for a while, and we've put them back on the street. And that doesn't help the community. It doesn't help the safety in the community. It doesn't help certainly the people who are homeless. We need to make some changes. We know that with Safe Space and Chat, we'll be around, you know, doing work. We have six houses at this point. We're going towards seven houses. We have well over 20 people we've got out of homelessness. It's been incredibly successful, the people we've moved in. We see success. We see people getting jobs. We see people stabilizing. All the things you can expect when you are in a safe space. You can reintegrate back into society. You can have help. We bring in some of our houses. We have people coming in to help guide the process, to help people get good credit again. All the things that help people back into society. Charles Wathun and I just purchased a 16-foot trailer. We're going to build a tiny home on it and let the community see what we're talking about, how someone can live in a home like this. It's basically a bedroom, but the people can live in it, and you can bring services to the people and stabilize their life, where they have a safe space to sleep, a safe space to have their belongings, a place to go when inclement weather during the day, rather than having to be out in the street. And from that point, we can also bring services to people to help them, again, reintegrate into society. So we're looking to build this unit, and we're going to need some volunteers, and we're also going to need some money to do it. And we're going to take it around and let people see what has happened in other communities across this country, actually. You look in Texas, it's happening. It's happening in Wisconsin. It's happening in some places in California, in Washington, and Oregon. So we'd like to see it happen in our own community, because rather than having people on the street, which can be difficult for the people and also the people that are shopping, whatever, downtown, if you give someone a home and give them a step up and a hand up, that's what we're looking for to happen in our community. And we're hoping that the new city council has a different perspective. For a long time, I don't think we were listening to each other. I think maybe now we have an opportunity to listen to each other and realize that we have to take new steps to make a difference in our community for all the homeless that we have in here. And we probably have, at this point, our estimate is around 1,000 people that are homeless. And there's a lot of reasons for it. Technology is a reason. Lack of jobs, part-time jobs. Some of the people that we deal with are working part-time, but they can't get inside because they don't qualify for the three times the monthly rent. So we need to step up as a community and do that. And you're going to be seeing this. We're going to start building soon. So you're going to see a little unit going up here, right here in our own community. And we'd like to build a lot of those and find a place for them and have the community support and talk to the city council that we need to change what's been happening in our community and have give people a hand up, which stops us from having to give people a hand out.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things, you know, the point in time was very well staffed and very well executed this year. That they counted 1,800, Bob.
Right.
We got about a third of the surveys entered in at this point.
Right.
The other thing I'd like to touch upon, maybe land on for a minute, is because I'm sure maybe not a lot of the listeners have heard this, but you know, I think everyone, every listener knows that they had an emergency evacuation at the fairgrounds. I think you'd have to have been living in a cave not to know that. But as it got ready to shut down towards the end of last week, I believe it was, the only people left were a couple of dozen homeless folks.
People, yes.
What would you say to that, Bob?
Well, I think it's a shame that they couldn't keep it open. I kind of addressed that at the beginning here, that it's unfortunate that our city and the state doesn't declare a shelter crisis. We have a crisis in the state of California and in the cities in California and the counties in California, and it's not being addressed the way it should be addressed. Because if we declare a shelter crisis, we can actually do something about it. We can design homes that would be able to move these people into shelter and change their lives dramatically. Rather than moving them into the court system, into jails, onto the street, behind buildings, no place to shower, no place to wash their clothes, no place to go to the bathroom, we would actually be able to give this to people. And it's really, really important that we do that.
You know what I want to transition to for the last few minutes, Bob? It's been my real pleasure to have Lisa Currier on several times. And I have not spoken to you about the wonderful chat house, the master lease, that you gave her some keys, and you've got four folks in that home that she's giving mental health services to. Give us a little insight on that wonderful program.
Well,
wonderful,
you know, program. Each one of our homes has a different clientele. And one of our homes, we decided that we it's our responsibility, again, to help people who have mental challenges. We don't want them in jail. We don't want them on the streets. We don't want them abused. We want them to be taking their medicine. Many of these people do need medicine. So we can give them services. We're actually teaching them to cook. We're teaching them to do to reach out to the services that are necessary to upgrade their life. We're teaching them how to handle money. So it's a really, really important, and Lisa is amazing, her patience and understanding of the people who have these challenges. And the house has been running wonderfully. All our houses are actually running wonderfully. It takes a lot of our energy. We're all volunteers. But the thing is, we see the success. We see the love. We see the understanding. I can't tell you how many times people at Safe Spaces come up and said, you know, you guys are so different. We feel love here.
Yeah.
We feel love here. We don't feel judged. We feel love. There's nothing put upon us. We know we have problems. But you guys just help us. And that's what chat is all about. And the safe-based program is all about is helping people with love and trying to, like I say, give them a hand up and not necessarily have them give them a handout.
It makes such a big difference because one of my best friends in Chico, shout out to Tammy Donaldson, you know, I'd helped out her nephew who's in that home.
Yeah,
and he literally, you know, he's a young guy. He's less than 25, but serious. You know, he's got some serious issues, and he's doing wonderfully there.
Yes,
so I can't say enough, Bob, for your program.
He is, and we have other people in there, people that I've known for years that haven't smiled in years, and are smiling and laughing because they feel safe and secure, and they don't feel like they're going to be back out in the street. And there's also people who understand their condition, which is really, really important.
Way important. We got just enough time for you to give your website or how to get a hold of you, Bob.
Well, you can call me.
Call Bob.
518-8509, because we're going to be looking for people to build, and we're going to be looking for people who are willing to donate some money so we can buy the necessary materials to build this tiny home and let the people in Chico see what we're about and why we want to build more of these and find a piece of property for chat to purchase or to lease or to be given to by the city or county so we can move people out of homelessness.
Wonderful, Bob. It's always a pleasure to have you here, and thanks for everything that you and your organization does. And until next week, signing off from the Without a Roof Radio Program. Guillermo Mash here, host of the Without a Roof Radio Program, which kicks off a trifecta of KZFR Wednesday public affairs programming airing from 5 to 5:30. Each week, we explore poverty, the worst form of violence, focusing on human beings without a roof. We can be found on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at WOAROOF, and we can be found on our homepage at WOAROOF.TUMBLR.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a roof, be grateful. Next up is Jeannie Trezino with Non-Human Radio from 5:30 to 6 p.m., followed by Sue Hildebrand and The Real Issue here on People Power Radio.